Every Woman is a womanish show about women making a difference and the men by their side. As 50% of the world's population and 52% of eligible U.S. voters, women are not a special interest group, and every woman should work and vote toward nothing less than 50-50 participation in social, political, economic, and environmental arenas. The opinions and views expressed on Every Woman are those of the hosts and guests and do not necessarily represent those of the KKFI board, staff, volunteers, or sponsors of KKFI and the Midcoast Radio Project, Incorporated. Good afternoon. This is Sharon Lockhart, and that was Amy Bell. And Beth Pike is not with us today. We will be joined later by, in a few minutes actually, by Julie Burkhart, Executive Director and Founder of Trust Women in Wichita. And we'll be discussing Kansas legislative issues around women's reproductive health, why women's reproductive health is important to women, and various other topics. And first, we're going to hear Women's E-News, read by Amy Bell today.
Cheers and jeers from Women's E-News. In cheers, Internet activists scored a landmark victory as the top U.S. telecommunications regulator approved a plan to govern broadband Internet like a public utility, The Guardian reported February 26th. Following a very intense lobbying battle, the Federal Communications Commission passed strict new rules that give the body more powers over the cable industry. FCC Chairman Tom Wheeler said that while other countries were trying to control the Internet, the sweeping new U.S. protections on net neutrality, the concept that all information services should be equal access online rather than corporations receiving faster speeds at higher costs, represents a red-letter day for Internet freedom. More news to cheer this week. Oregon lawmakers have introduced the Comprehensive Women's Health Bill, which would ensure affordable and complete reproductive care for all women and transgender men in the state, RH Reality Check reported February 26th. If the bill passes, Oregon would be the first state to ensure all residents are covered for all reproductive health care, including abortion, under all forms of insurance. Families of New Yorkers killed by police have launched a campaign to have Governor Andrew Cuomo appoint a special prosecutor to all cases of police using deadly force. In a letter released on February 25th, the group mainly consists of mothers who have lost their children at the hands of police over the past two decades, including the mothers of Sean Bell and Eric Garner. For the first time ever, the United States has appointed a special envoy for the human rights of lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender persons, NPR reported. In a statement, Secretary of State John Kerry said Randy Berry's job will be to reaffirm the universal human rights of all persons, regardless of sexual orientation or gender identity. Rep. Thomas Mert, a Republican from Montgomery, has reintroduced a bill that would establish the offense of female mutilation in the Pennsylvania Criminal Code, Penn Live reported February 26th. Individuals taking part in the removal of a female minor's genitalia, including a parent, would face a first-degree felony charge. Christine Lagarde, head of the International Monetary Fund, suggested this week that nations remove laws that prevent women from working in order to increase the female labor supply and boost their economies, The Guardian reported February 24th. The social media campaign, hashtag AskHerMore, created in February 2014 to fight sexism on the red carpet, marked the Oscars ceremony in Hollywood on February 22nd. The campaign aims to inspire reporters to ask more creative questions instead of focusing on the dresses worn by women attending the ceremony, CBS News reported. In addition, the night Patricia Arquette, in her acceptance speech for Best Supporting Actress in Boyhood, called on the global audience to fight for equal rights and pay for women in the U.S., Politico reported. Turkish men are showing solidarity after the brutal murder of a young woman by wearing miniskirts. In recent days, the hashtag Özgecan İkini Mini Tekiti, translated as wear a miniskirt for Özgecan, has begun circulating, often accompanied with a photo of a man wearing a short skirt, CNN reported. The social media campaign is a response to the killing of Azkan Aslan, 20, who allegedly fought off a sexual assault before her body was burned and dumped into a riverbed. Spain has said it broke up an online network accused of recruiting young women to join the militants of the Islamic State fighting in Iraq and Syria, The Telegraph reported February 24th. Four suspects were arrested. Gender equality is, quote, not just a nice thing to do, former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton said February 24th at the first Watermark Silicon Valley Conference for Women in Santa Clara. She added that equality for women is necessary to ensure a country's economic and political stability. Where women are included, you are more likely to have democracy, she said, according to live-tweeted accounts of her speech, Newsweek reported February 24th. In jeers. The U.S. Department of Education has found that the New York City Department of Education has violated Title IX. The city department, which operates the public schools in New York City, has failed to abide by the federal law that prohibits sex discrimination in education and provide high school girls with equal opportunities to play sports as boys, according to a press release published by the National Women's Law Center. Investigations confirmed that girls in New York City public schools were underrepresented in athletics programs and determined that an additional 3,862 opportunities would be needed to level the playing field for female students. Women's E! News first reported on the issue in 2009. More news to jeer this week. Three teenage girls from the UK have disappeared after boarding a flight to Istanbul last week, Jezebel reported February 23rd. Shamima Begum, 15, Khadiza Sultana, 16, and Amira Abase, 15, were seen last week on airport security footage. On February 23rd, The Telegraph reported that intelligence sources inside Turkey said the three schoolgirls were seen traveling with a Syrian companion in a private car and have likely already crossed into Syria. In addition, Canadian authorities are looking for at least four teenagers, including two women, who may have also flown to Turkey to a bid to join ISIS, CNN reported February 27th. Many recommendations to investigate the violence and murder of Aboriginal women and girls in Canada are still being ignored, according to a new report on the issue published February 26th, the CBC reported. The founder of Hot Yoga, Bikram Choudhury, is facing lawsuits by six women who claim he sexually assaulted them, the Associated Press reported February 27th. Choudhury's lawyers have denied the accusations. Poor women in the United States are five times more likely to have an unplanned birth than those who are affluent, according to a recent study, Vox reported. Although women are equally sexually active across all earning groups, the researchers found women who earn less are also less likely to use contraceptives. However, high-income women have a much higher abortion rate than lower-income women and use a contraception which results in fewer unintended births. The head of the UN Climate Change Panel, Rajendra Pachauri, has stepped down amid claims he sexually harassed a woman working in his office in Delhi, the Daily Mail reported. It has been reported that the woman claims the alleged harassment included unwanted emails, texts, and phone messages. Pachauri has denied the accusations. Women working for Hillary Clinton's office when she was senator were paid 72 cents for each dollar paid to men, according to a Washington Free Beacon analysis of her Senate's year's salary data. From 2001 to 2009, the median annual salary for a woman working in Clinton's office was $15,708.30 less than the median salary for a man, according to the analysis of data. No reaction from Clinton has been reported. During a hearing for a bill that would ban doctors from prescribing abortion-inducing medication through telemedicine, an Idaho lawmaker asked if a woman could swallow a small camera for doctors to conduct a remote gynecological exam. The question came from Republican State Rep. Vito Barbieri, the Associated Press reported. He later said the question was rhetorical and intended to make a point. Wisconsin Governor Scott Walker has toughened his stance on abortion, according to an article published earlier this week by the New York Times. The governor, who has chances of being included in the pick for the presidential primaries for the GOP, announced that he had passed anti-choice legislation in Wisconsin and removed funding for Planned Parenthood. Heart disease is responsible for 1 in 4 women's deaths. A study from the American Heart Association said this happens because most women do not get treated for symptoms of a heart attack, Jezebel reported February 24th. The article reports many women do not get treated as they do not want to appear to be hypochondriacs. Noted. A female Saudi filmmaker won an award for the best drama at the Saudi Film Festival, Agence France-Presse reported February 25th. Hannah El Omayar took the Golden Palm Tree Prize for her drama, Complain. It told the story of a hospital worker who lodges a complaint against a colleague, an act symbolizing everything wrong in her life. Another woman, Shahad Amin, won second prize in the drama category for I and Mermaid, a fantasy about a girl who discovers her father has tortured a mermaid to extract beautiful black pearls. Women in Asia-Pacific region lag behind men in securing leadership roles in business and politics, despite being better educated, an annual gender equality index revealed on February 27th, Reuters reported. The Iranian journalist Mahsa Alinjad, who launched last year's Stealthy Freedoms of Iranian Women, inviting Iranian women to post a photo of themselves without a veil on Facebook, has received a human rights award in Geneva for her initiative, The Guardian reported. In a report released this week, the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention found that use of long-lasting contraceptive methods, which include intrauterine devices and contraceptive implants, increased nearly fivefold in the last decade among women aged 15 to 44, from 1.5% in 2002 to 7.2% in 2013. And we're just hooking up with Julie Burkhart on the line. And do we want to play our messages now, Amy, or do we want to go ahead with the interview? Let's go ahead. Julie, are you online with us? Hello? Julie?
All right, we're going to try Julie again here.
And meantime, I suppose we can play some messages?
We'll do that.
Okay.
Support for 90.1 FM is provided by City in Motion Dance Theater, presenting the 12th annual A Modern Night at the Folly on February 28th at 8 p.m. live at the Folly Theater at 300 West 12th Street, featuring new works by 10 choreographers. Every year, dancers and dance lovers anticipate this choreographer showcase because it brings our entire dance community together. That's A Modern Night at the Folly this Saturday, February 28th at 8 p.m. Tickets are available at Folly Box Office or at FollyTheater.org.
After I had sent President Johnson a telegram telling him to bring the people home from the Dominican Republic in Vietnam, and I said to President Johnson at that time, if this society of yours is a great society, God knows I would hate to live in a bad one.
The irrepressible Fannie Lou Hamer on the Pacifica Radio Archives from the Vault, Wednesday morning at 5.
Funding for KKFI provided by the Weekly Forum at All Souls UU Church. Each Sunday at 10 a.m., the forum will feature a discussion on community issues. All Souls UU Church is at 4501 Walnut Street, one block east of Main in Kansas City. More information is at allsoulskc.org.
A new report suggests that eliminating racism in the criminal justice system is about much more than what's in a cop's mind. Hear from the report's author on Counterspin, Tuesday at 6:30 p.m.
And now we have Julie Burkhart from Trust Women in Wichita, Kansas, on the line with us. Welcome, Julie.
Hi, good afternoon.
Great, lots to talk about. And I'd like to start it out like this. I would like for you to relate the How Did Trust Women Come About, your story leading up to forming Trust Women, and then a little bit of discussion about why reproductive rights are so important to women and their families. And then we'll go into the legislature in Kansas, and we can have fun with that. And in the meantime, I think we'd like to invite our listeners to call in if they would like to add in to the part about why are reproductive rights so important to women, so that we'll take phone calls, because we've got from now until the end of the show to talk, so we've got plenty of time. So let me give that phone number. It's 816-931-5534 if you want to be on the air with Julie Burkhart. And Julie, can you tell us, how did you come to form Trust Women?
Well, thank you, Sharon and Amy, for having me on this afternoon. This is a treat. I founded Trust Women in July of 2009, and it was just a couple of months after Dr. Tiller's assassination. And as you all know, that really left a lot of people, I could probably say 100% of people in the women's rights movement, reeling after his death. And so I was encouraged to set something up in order to carry on the work that we had been doing. When I first founded the organization Trust Women, I founded just a political action committee. And as we started to do our work and try to build that organization, it just did not feel right. I felt like it was somewhat senseless for us to want to do this political work if we didn't have access for women, and, you know, namely a clinic in Wichita, which closed after his assassination. So we did a bit of a redirect and decided that the mission of Trust Women would be to help to provide access to women and their families in underserved communities so that all people can make decisions, informed decisions about their health care. And we do this primarily only in the Midwest and the South. So after a couple of long years after founding that piece of the organization, then we were fortunate enough to open Southwind Women's Center in Wichita, where Dr. Tiller had his former practice, and we are going to be celebrating our second year this April. So I'm just so I just every day feel honored to be working with everybody on our staff in the state, across the country, who really helped to make this thought and this vision a reality, because it's so incredibly important. And I'll tell you, we're working on opening a second clinic where there's also a lack of access in Oklahoma at this time. And so that's the story. And it's just so incredibly important that women are able to control their fertility, to be able to decide if they want to have an abortion, if they want to have a baby, or if they need to give that baby up for adoption. It's important for women to be able to control the direction of their reproductive lives, because without that, I don't feel that we have much control over our lives. And so that's what we do every day at our clinic here in Wichita, is help women make the best decision possible for themselves and their families at that point in time.
It seems so important to me, if we're going to talk about equality for women, that to have sovereignty over our own bodies would seem to be just a basic right. And I you know, had a hysterectomy at age 34, so not an issue for me, but, it rankles me to think that someone else, like a male politician, should be able to decide what's best for me. We just did a show from Wings, and I just remember a quote about that poor women, of course, are the most impacted by unwanted pregnancies, as they have generally lack even to birth control or are less likely to take birth control. And I know birth control has a cost, and until recently, I'm not even sure employers were providing birth control. And so I don't know, are they mandated to provide birth control now?
Well, under the Affordable Care Act, contraceptives are supposed to be covered. The copay has been eliminated. However, in the state of Kansas, we will not see that actually. Oh, I can't even tell you now if it's another year, 2 years. But the old way in which women were charged for contraceptives was grandfathered in. And so we see women every day who come into our clinic, and they still have to pay a copay for contraceptive care. And I'm just not quite sure when that expires now, off the top of my head.
Well, and having coverage doesn't necessarily mean having the information, the knowledge, especially if the education system isn't teaching comprehensive sex ed, to know that you need to get yourself an appointment and take that pill every day.
Right. Education is key. And, you know, we have seen, very disappointing things in this state and other states where, you know, contraception has been attacked. Just this last year, the Saline County Commission rejected a grant that would have provided a number of IUDs to women who couldn't afford them. Education is key, so that women know the different types of contraceptives that are available and then, how to access those.
If we could get into the heads of these politicians who are so dead set on controlling women's reproductive body parts, what would they look like? I mean, where are their heads? You know, I can think of one place their heads might be, but what is this about? Why do we waste so much money in all the states, not just Kansas, on this issue and time? Is there a good answer for that? I said, is there a good answer to that? Does anybody know?
Well, my feeling is it comes down to who's going to have power and control. And, we can maintain a certain part of the status quo if we're controlling women's fertility and controlling their lives.
So if we're barefoot and pregnant, then somebody's got their thumb on us.
Yes.
Oh, yes, that's indeed. Pretty basic.
So I did want to mention that the Center for Reproductive Rights and IBIS Research Institute, they published a study last summer, and this is something that I've handed out to some of our elected officials, but what it shows with this study is that states that have some of the most or the most restrictive abortion laws have poorer health outcomes for women and their families. So there's a direct correlation to the restrictiveness of those laws and the health outcomes for women. And so I feel like that really feeds into that need to have control and power over, because if we don't have that under the dome or in our communities, then we're at the will of those policymakers.
Well, I'd like to share one of my personal experiences, and I go out of my way sometimes to speak with people who are on the Right to Life movement, as they like to call themselves, and I am really blown away by how much the narrative of control does play into it, because if you get them talking long enough, the conversation easily gets steered towards they don't believe women should go to college. They don't think their daughters should be forced into public education, in compulsory education. And it's so much more than reproductive health.
Sounds pretty backward.
And I just think that that's one of the really telling things, that this is an issue of control. And that when you support choice, you still have a choice to follow your church's doctrine or whatever your moral compass tells you to do. It just still allows choice.
Some people have I don't know, is it how we word it, how we phrase it, the sound bites, is choice, you know, they'll say, well, it's not a choice, it's a child. Well, you know, in my opinion, this is a lot of brouhaha over a zygote or a sperm or a fetus. In most cases, this unborn child that isn't really a formed child for many months, it's just something that I find outrageous language.
Well, you know, and I think that also, you know, in all the polling that, you know, we have done here in Kansas, you know, a majority of Kansans are supportive of a woman's right to access abortion care. And so, you know, we've seen that time and time again. So I feel like, you know, our elected officials are so incredibly out of step with where their constituents are at. And I think what perpetuates that cycle is the fear of, if I, you know, stand up for the rights of women to access abortion care and other reproductive health care, then I'm somehow going to be ostracized in my community. And I keep battling in my head, like, how can we help people to walk through that point of fear and see that it's not that bad, it will not be that intense, you know, and you will make it out the other side and we'll have a healthier state for it.
I, it looks to me, well, I pretty much say whatever it is I think, and everyone who knows me knows that. And I just would not, if I thought, it just perplexes me, because it seems to me they're trying to force their own narrow-minded beliefs on other people, more so than that they're afraid. Because if the majority of Kansans support, and we do think that's correct, that why wouldn't the politicians do that? Unless they're afraid of the leaders of their party, or I don't know.
Well, I think that's a big part of it. You know, we've seen elected officials over the years who have switched their position on women's rights because they want to achieve higher office. And so, you know, we've definitely witnessed that, where, you know, women are sold down the river because some politician wants to advance in his or her career.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing. If our listeners would like to call in, it's 816-931-5534. Amy, did you have anything you wanted to add?
Well, on the reason for... Why we should have reproductive rights?
Economically, it makes sense.
Well, I am also of the opinion that freedom means dominion over your own body in its very basic sense. I mean, that just, without that, there is no freedom, and you can't live in a free country if you are missing that one piece. And even if it's only for half the population that misses that one piece of dominion over their own body, then the whole nation is not free. I think it's a basic, fundamental piece of what it means to be American.
And the abortion rights isn't the full thing. Julie already mentioned it. I mean, they're after contraceptives, too. Mm-hmm. I mean, they would ban contraceptives.
Well, and I was recently in another state at a conference, and I always kind of like to you know, listen to the radio stations. I kind of go up and down the dial as I'm driving, and I came across this one show. It's a woman, anti-choice, but she was talking about the evils of contraception, and she also was stressing that couples can also abuse natural family planning.
Oh, my gosh.
Which I found to be very interesting. So there's, you know, I guess no one is pure enough, even probably people within their, obviously, their own ranks. But I wanted to just, you know, one thing that Dr. Tiller would always say, which has really resonated with me is, and I won't get this verbatim, but he would always say, you know, abortion is not a medical matter. It's not a cerebral matter. It's a matter of the heart. And until you really understand the heart of a woman and what she's going through and where she's at, then it just doesn't make any sense at all. Time and time again, you know, seeing women who walk through our doors, they're just trying to make the best decision possible. And I think that the decision to have an abortion is about motherhood. It's if you already have children, and about 70% of the women who come into our clinic already have children, so it's those women wanting to be good mothers to those children, and it's about being a good mother in the future if you're not ready at that time. So these are very responsible people coming in to have abortions.
And we have a caller on the line. Caller, could you state your first name and where you're calling from?
Sure, John. I'm from Kansas City, Missouri.
Thanks for calling, John. And did you have a comment for us?
Yeah, I think of what, you know, like progressives or populists, you know, are confused about is that the people on the right are not stupid. I mean, they have a different worldview.
No, I think we know that there's a different worldview.
Yeah, it's patriarchy. It's what it is.
Yeah.
The God is over man, and the male is over the female.
Mm-hmm.
Whites are over browns and blacks, over nature. That's their worldview. And when you look at what they do, it's perfectly consistent with their worldview.
That was
not illogical or stupid or backward. I mean, mm-hmm. You know, you could say it's... So it's something that people believed in the past, you know, almost universally, but, you know, may not in modern times. But the same thing you could say about the Taliban or the Salafists or the Wahhabis, you know. They share very similar views with the right in this country. I mean, look at all the issues they would agree upon. That's really mind-boggling.
I actually did see that in an international policy course I took years ago in college, was that the American Midwest and the Middle East have the most similar worldview of any two peoples in the world.
Right, they do. And if you go, I guess, the Old South, too. But, yeah, they have very similar, they're patriarchal views of the world.
Well, and I would think that, and Sharon and Julie, maybe you can comment on this. My personal opinion is that they have a right to that worldview. They just don't have a right to enforce it on me.
Right.
That was exactly what I was going
right.
to say.
But in their worldview, you are not, you're a child.
Exactly.
You're a father. There are father figures. God's the primal father figure. And then when you come on down the pecking order, it's the male, the white male.
Right, and I think you said it very well to say that in their worldview, I'm a child.
Right, that's
as,
the way
as a fully grown woman
right.
who has, you know,
yeah.
a life that I have made of my own,
mm.
I am still absolutely viewed as a child. And I find it hard to imagine who would find that acceptable. But I recognize that some people do.
Right. Oh, yeah. A lot of people do. Yeah. Even if they don't really know they do. There are women who hold that view. I talk to them all the time. They unconsciously defer to the male dominance. They accept it.
Well, John, thank you for your call.
They are, but if you listen to what they advocate for, it's patriarchy.
Well, thank you for the call. That was actually some pretty nice, concise summation of some of the concepts we had here. Thank you very much.
Could I say one word, narrow-minded?
Yeah.
Okay, thanks, John. Thank you,
man.
John.
Bye.
Well, Julie, did you have any comments to add to the caller we just got on the line there?
No, just that I, you know, what you said, I would... echo that as well. You know, I think people are definitely entitled to their own belief systems, but it can't be forced on all of us.
Well, and that is a narrative that we hear quite frequently, is that us progressives or us feminists or something, name a label and put it on us, are trying to take away their way of life. Like, we are trying to demolish the very foundations on which they live. And I find that strange because I could not care less how a person chooses to live their life as long as they're not telling me how to live mine.
Yes, I mean, and I think that by us, you know, moving into encroaching on their realm, which disrupts their comfort level, that's really the issue here.
Well, I think we need to move on to what's going on in the Kansas State House. And, I mean, I think that we could continue this conversation for quite a while longer. I mean, it is part of the national debate, but... there are specifically some issues going on in Kansas right now, in particular the Senate Bill 95, and their very grotesque and emotional language that they use in it.
Yes. So we are going to see this bill in House Federal and State Affairs Committee. There's going to be a hearing on Monday, March 9th, so a week from this coming Monday. And their goal with this bill, Senate Bill 95, is to push back the gestational limits for women when it comes to abortion care. This is based on Gonzalez v. Carhart. We have now seen the 20-week bans, and this is, you know, yet another ban which pushes that legal limit back even further. And so this is an incredibly troubling bill. We have it here in Kansas. There's also a bill in Oklahoma. It's made it through one chamber. And it's in Missouri as well.
It is in Missouri right now?
Yes. And I did not get an update. The last I had looked, it was introduced, and it had not gone to committee.
Do you have a time for that hearing on Monday the 9th?
Yes, it's at 9 a.m., and it's in room 346 South, the old Supreme Court room. And we're going to be gathering, well, there at 346 South, and then also we'll have a gathering point down on the first floor in the rotunda. A number of us will be gathering there before the hearing.
Then on March 11, there's another Voices for Choice. Is that correct? In Topeka also?
Yes. So the Voices for Choice luncheon, it begins at 11:30 a.m., I believe, on the first floor. And various people from across the state who have worked in this movement long and hard will be honored.
Great. And I wonder, where can they find more information?
Well, we have on our website at www.itrustwomen.org. It's itrustwomen.org. People can go there to sign up for the hearing on Monday, March 9th. And then we also have something on our website about the luncheon. And people could also go to the Planned Parenthood of Kansas and Mid Missouri site and the Mainstream Coalition. I believe they have it up as well.
Okay. How many bills are there in Kansas? Do we know at this time that affect women's?
There's one at this time that would ban procedures in the second trimester from being done in a certain way, and that's D&E, dilation and extraction. We haven't seen any other anti-choice bills introduced, but we're keeping our ears to the ground. We may see something in the House.
Well, the House had a parallel bill to SB 95 that was the same wording almost.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And I think it is kind of looking like that bill is going to make it through the House. Is that what you're...
Yes, it's, we're going to fight this bill every step of the way, but over the last couple of election cycles, we have lost pro-choice seats, unfortunately, in the legislature, and so it makes it very challenging for us to stop anything on the House floor.
Well... The other thing that I was understanding about this bill is that it is a model.
Yes. The National Right to Life Committee, they've been quite proud of this. I think probably the Americans United for Life, so a couple of the, national anti-choice groups have, been working with local state groups on this legislation. So what you see here in Kansas and Oklahoma and Missouri, it's all similar. There was a bill in South Dakota, but they did amend that, so it does not carry that language any longer. Session's not over there yet, so it could change. But at this point, they've removed that language. But, in these three states here, it's all very, very similar.
Well, and it's a chiseling away bill. Mm-hmm. And they use very inflammatory language. They use the kind of language that makes otherwise pro-choice individuals think, now, wait a minute, this does seem really terrible. How can they do this? This maybe it's okay to be illegal. But... and this is what I've heard, and you being someone who works in a clinic, that mm-hmm. this is basically just the standard procedure, industry standard procedure for a second trimester abortion.
Yes. This is an internationally accepted procedure, a D&E, and it is the safest, also the most cost-effective procedure for a woman. So, but first and foremost, this is the safest. So if we have to move to doing second trimester procedures in another way, we are actually going to be putting women's lives, their health, out there. Because we're going to be saying to women, well, we can't do a D&E because the legislature has said this. Now we have to do this procedure or that procedure, which can cause more uterine bleeding. There's a higher risk of infertility. It's just, a litany of things that could happen. And so what our legislature is saying is that they have no regard for the health of women. And this is about blocking access and outlawing abortion.
Well, and the other thing that kind of struck me is that in Kansas, there's so many obstacles for a woman to get a first trimester mm-hmm. abortion that they've almost pushed women into the second trimester procedure that they're now trying to ban.
Well, right. And that's, you know, the one of the opponents who is a doctor from somewhere, he, you know, said that, well, maybe this will help women make a decision earlier. Well, you know, we have women who don't know they're pregnant until, you know, maybe in their first, in their second trimester. Or maybe a woman has dated her last menstrual period wrong. Or maybe a woman does not have enough money, and so she's waiting until she gets paid or raises enough money to be able to have a procedure. And I'll remind you that for women who have insurance in the state of Kansas, we cannot bill insurance companies, nor does the state allow Medicaid to pay for abortion services. So if you are a woman and you have Medicaid or private insurance and you would like to use that, you're banned from doing that in the state of Kansas. So it really makes women jump through a lot of hurdles.
Now, when you were talking about that, this is what comes to mind when I hear the term trust women, that there are a billion different circumstances. There's as many different circumstances as there are people. And to basically say that, well, they could have done this, they should have done this, is not acknowledging that situations from person to person are drastically different and that they should just trust the woman.
Correct. You know, well, and also, you know, another thing I didn't point out is that for teens who might become pregnant, we often see that teenagers who become pregnant often don't know until later. They're afraid to talk to their parents or an adult. So, you know, this also would really put at risk our teenagers. And, you know, we don't need to be doing that.
You know, the irony of it all is that the previous show on Wings was just talking about the lack of support for caring caregivers in this country, and the fact that we don't have a National Family Medical Leave Act, to the best of my ability, that we don't have, we just don't, we don't have affordable child care. Most women have to work outside the home now to make ends meet in a family. And certainly if they're a single woman, they would be hard-pressed to find themselves pregnant and have to find child care and have time off work to have a baby.
Well, correct. I mean, there are all kinds of things that women have to navigate around. And I just recently, it was on an NPR affiliate station, I think it was somewhere on the East Coast, but there's a study that they were talking about, you know, showing that there's a direct correlation between women's, you know, incomes and their ability to contracept and access contraceptives effectively. And, you know, we can all guess what it is. Lower your income, the less likely you are to contracept, and, you know, it's a function of how much money you have in the bank. And so there are a lot of things that women have to navigate around in order to control their lives and shape their family life.
Yeah, and that's what always strikes me when we see a new abortion bill, is that it looks at abortion as though it is a self-contained issue, that all things are equal except some people get abortions. And that's just not what is going on. And then they're passing a bill right now that SB 95 is going, and at the same time there's HB 2199 that will force children to get a permission form to take sex education. And, of course, children whose parents are not engaged in their upbringing may be the parents that don't sign that form. So kids who need a little bit of guidance from their teachers and trusted adults at their school are going to be excluded from being taught the very things that they would need to actually lower abortion rates in this state.
Mm-hmm.
Correct.
It just doesn't compute. I know John said that they aren't ignorant people. Okay, so he brings it all back to patriarchy, keep women in their place, which is second-class citizens. Maybe it's just all that simple, but it seems like there's a lot of ignorance involved in, or ignorance involved in all of these laws.
Yeah, and we're, you know, really doing our young people a great disservice by not teaching them about their bodies, and you know, because it's a very confusing time for teens. You know, I've got a 14-year-old daughter, and you know, as a parent, I want to help her navigate as best I can, and also her teachers as well. And yeah, so it's frustrating seeing that the tools are being you know, taken away from them.
Yeah, I just question what the real, when they say that their motives are to cut down abortions in Kansas, I just don't see their actions actually helping the cause that they claim to be doing.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the thing that gets me, because I am very pro-choice. I think we're all very pro-choice. That does not mean we want more people to have abortions. That is absolutely not what that means.
But, you know,
we want women to be prepared for their families.
But we could say we're pro-life, too. But what they're doing is not, it's not pro-life at all. What they are is pro-fetus. But once the baby hits the ground, there's no safety net there for the mother or for the child. They're just out on their own. And so it just really is, it's a crime to me that legislators get away with this and that we keep electing these people.
I agree. Can I mention a few ways that people could help, you know, advocate against SB 95?
Yes, certainly.
You know, we're encouraging that people write letters to the editor, and we can actually help with that. We've had a number of letters placed, and we'd like to keep that up. So, you know, people can hear from their friends and neighbors in their communities, and elected officials can see these letters. To call the legislators on the House Federal and State Affairs Committee and or send them an email and let them know that there's opposition to this bill, and then also to, you know, come to the Capitol on March 9th so that we can show the legislators that there's strong opposition to this.
And if they go to your website, you've got a place where they can pull up the legislators, don't you?
Yes. If you go to itrustwomen.org, you can find at the top there's a link that will take you to the legislators. Or you can also go to kslegislature.org and pull up the committees through the KS Legislature website.
I have already sent in my written testimony. I sent it in to all members of the Senate, but now I'm going to have to do it again for all members of the House because they still passed that bill. And I did get back a very formulaic letter from one senator that was just, oh, I really appreciate your letter, and I really have very strong consideration, and we have to look into every possible aspect of this. And you could tell that it wasn't even referencing the bill that we were talking about.
Yeah. Right.
Oh. Yeah. So they got right on that.
Yeah, like email is pretty good, but you have to open it and read it. So the bodies at the Capitol probably have more meaning than the emails that we send.
But, you know, if you still see in your inbox that heading that says vote against SB 95, that is, they don't have to read all of them to see that their inbox has been flooded. I mean, everything helps. If you can send an email is what I would tell people.
Good point.
Yes.
Well, we are actually getting up to being out of time today, and I really appreciate you coming on the show with us, Julie. I think it was very...
this was great. Anytime.
Insightful conversation, and I hope that we can do it again sometime.
Yeah, well, thank you. Hope you all have a nice weekend.
Okay. You as well.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
And make sure you stay tuned to Urban Connections with Donna Wolf coming up next, and then guess who's coming to Kansas City with MC Richardson.